Let's do it.
Blog Talk yeah. Radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. African American Empowerment Saturday. It is 365 days of motivation and personal practice for you. It's your man Marvin Rowan and the crew. Coming to you live from the downtown Richmond. We're studying our Black history today. Welcoming you all to the celebration. It's our history, our culture, our education, our community, our people, our family, each day, every day, one day at a time. Oh yeah. And as we always say, there is no better love, no greater love than self and kind. No greater love. Oh yeah. Welcome to African American Empowerment. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for the African American community. And the first thing we want to do is to be able to welcome you all in to our online classroom. And today we're going to share with you what we do, right? And so with our programs and our activities with the National African American Empowerment Association, it is to educate, motivate, empower, and inspire our people, you, me, us, we, to do a better job of loving ourselves, working on ourselves, right? And we have a process that we're practicing, implementing to develop our own institutions that define our own reality, our own institutions that create a better community, right? How do we do it? Five simple principles that we want you to leave here practicing starting today, starting right now. The first one is P. We're spelling peace because we need peace in our homes, in our families, in our communities, and within ourselves. So we need a political agenda. Somebody say political.
Oh, they hear, they listen.
That means that we have to understand the importance of American and national and international politics. And as a collective, figure out strategies that's going to work for us to be able to implement and execute the resources that we need to employ our people, to create institutions that define our own reality, to support existing institutions. But not only that, right, to understand how to teach, train, and develop our people to understand the law and the system of law so that we not marching right into the prison system, right? So we know that they have a school-to-prison pipeline that our kids and our young men and our young ladies are funneled right into, and we're not doing anything to disrupt that process. Right. So how do we have political strategies to think about how we're going to be able to navigate our kids and our children, our young people around that system to something that we create for them where they don't have to go into that? Right. So we know that our communities are in survival mode. We know that many of our families are dysfunctional. We know that we need a better educational system. We know we need better family systems. So how do we do that? The next one is economics. That's the E. Right? How do we have an economic strategy that really looks at how we begin to utilize capitalism as a tool, right? Not to capitalize on capitalism, but to create those institutions that give us the resources that we need where we can build facilities just like this one to bring our children and our families to train and develop and learn about finances, money marketing, and strategies so that we can be on top of our game. The next one is athletics. Right, support it yourself and say, athletics, I got to get my A together, right? Your A, your act, right? And that is you got to start thinking about health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, physical health, mental health, and emotional health. We know that in our communities, we lead the league in health disparities, but also we have trauma, right? And we have a great deal of trauma that's been affecting and impacting our communities since enslavement. Right, and all the iterations that we've experienced all the way up until now, right? Mass incarceration, redlining, all the things, Jim Crow, black codes, you name it, that we had to deal with, right, as we had to continue to navigate and adapt to this system, right? And so as we continue to live inside of this system, your job is to take care of your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, and your spiritual health. I can't tell you what religion to choose, but I can tell you you need a spiritual component that reaches outside of yourself to find something greater than you so you can come back and do some work on this earth to help your people help themselves. We're struggling right now, right, as a group and as a community, and we need that greater love, right, that love for each other. Next is C, relevant cultural programs like this one that educate us, right, so we can get information. The first thing they took from us was our knowledge of self, right, our education, and that cultural piece is so important because it really defines who you are. When you know yourself, then you begin to act like yourself. And we've been taken away from ourselves and given another culture and another identity that we don't like who we are. We don't like what we look like. We don't like our nose. We don't like our hair. We don't like our skin color. And that's what we've been taught. And we have to unlearn those things and just love the greatest creation that's ever been created in the history of mankind. That's you, just as you are. Somebody got to say, just as I am. That's what we got to do. Lastly is E, comprehensive education that really looks at how we can use all these strategies and more to educate and invigorate and motivate and inspire ourselves to be the best that we can be. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with having a thriving community that helps itself, that gives resources and opportunities to our own self to create jobs and opportunities and institutions that fit us, that work for us, that are thriving for us, that our kids will readily go to and learn and then come back and then benefit from the experience and then help us build more institutions. That's how that is. Now I'm going to give y'all to stand back in a moment, and I'll be right back. Y'all give me a hand. Oh, that sounds pretty good. All right, here we go. Stand back in a moment, coming right up. All right, here we go. Okay.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
All right, so that's my man, Stan Bantley. Stan passed away about 2 years ago. Was a great mentor and a great friend, and he helped me with envisioning what we were going to do to help our people. And he spent his whole life working on trying to create institutions that define our own reality. So that's always going to be a tribute to my brother, my friend, right? So people, why you got to keep playing that? That's my friend. And even though he's not here physically, if he could be, he'd be right here with us. So guess what? He's right here with us. All right. Now let's move on to my favorite segment of the show. It's the Woody Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother George. We're going to bring him in. And this is, for real, the only way that I know how to do it. You ready, Brother George?
Sir.
All right, here we go, y'all.
I got to hit the streets off, make the streets talk, let them know it ain't a sweet walk. This gon' be the only joint made this year, little knock to 2003. And y'all gon' see that the hottest out there was, is, and will be me. Just like that, I can go away for a minute, do some other shit, bounce right back and wear this song. I'm coming strapped with some that'll spit from dusk to dawn. And when you gone, ain't no coming back in the morning like that shit with the dream. Gone. That's for real.
It's called Practicing Quality Theater Writing. And it also has a quote to better spot where that shit was written. And so, you got it. Shell. What goes around comes around. This expression is a common one in the African-American community. But in its most positive sense, it refers directly to the concept of the gospel. What we share of our resources, whether time, talent, money, or energy, returns to us as additional resources through which we can creatively improve our situation and progress towards our individual and collective goals. I always think that Marlon Barranco, my line of Barranco,
did a lot of great work to call to the things that you do for. And I always think that we fully take advantage of not all those things that we did, but the how we do it by ourselves. So every principle that they were studying, you know, it's part of it as people. And so I love, you know, always sharing. Now, the second part is willingness. The willingness segment is a segment that's designed to bring us out of the willingness to the senses. Willingness was something that had us not liking each other, light skin, dark skin, black male, female, dislike, not reading. And so I try to talk about things that's relative to that. So today I'm going to quote, I'm not going to quote, I'm going to make a statement about a book that was written by a sister by the name of Dr. Georgia Sue. And this is going to fall in line with what Brother Shaquille is going to speak on today. And a part of her book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, she used a concept called cognitive dissonance. And what cognitive dissonance is, she was saying that most whites suffer from cognitive dissonance. Now, what cognitive dissonance is like, it's when you understand that you did something wrong and create a conflict with it. And so it's just like when we as African Americans were discussed with the American government, the United government, about reparations because of what we went through during slavery, they want to say, oh, that was back then. That ain't got nothing to do with now. You see, and so a lot of whites will parrot that. They'll say the same thing. That has nothing to do with none of that. But see, really what that is that's the guilt that they feel from what they did to us. And now the end result is a lot of the things that these brothers and guilt is going to talk about today. And so, for example, if I give an example of cognitive dissonance, it ain't no need of giving them opportunity because we didn't do all we could for them already. You know, so why you want to give them opportunity? They don't do nothing but mess them up. But see, the dissonance part is that I'm not telling you that we messed y'all up. And so you're only acting out what you should be because of the way we messed your mind up. That's the dissonance part that they try to erase. You see, they're forming schools. They'll always be doing it just fairly, most of them. And 50% of them drop out, and they end up in the prison system. But then they forget to mention the 13th Amendment that talks about the only way that you can treat a person like a slave again is if you have them incarcerated. And so they went out of their way to incarcerate. So I wanted to speak on this term because it's really a relevant term for us to keep in mind. Because they're using it all the time. You know, we need to prepare ourselves because next thing you know, they're going to just take it over everything. So we're not trying to take over nothing. But see, the dissonance says we treated them so bad that they should be trying to take over. Their negotiation is in their mind. So they run around with these flags, they run around with all this threatening language. And I'm really surprised that we have black Trump support. I mean, I am totally surprised that we have that. And the reason why I say that is that's just like being on segregation and you guys are right behind the Ku Klux Klan march. And we got black people that support Trump. That's what you got to be doing because it's made supporters of white nationalists. And so you march and right behind that man, you want to kill in office because he gave us that stimulus check. He did not give you the stimulus check. That stimulus check was put into effect by the Barack Obama administration, and then the Congress voted on it when Trump got elected, and so he was forced to give that stimulus check to the people, and then he put his name on it. And that folks going around acting like he did it. I am really afraid about our people. But look, this is Brother Shakira Show, and that's my segment, and thank you very much, brother.
All right, thank you, Brother George. I think we have to be conscious, right, of what we're doing, right? But not only what we're doing, why we're doing, why we do what we do. Now, our next segment is Be the One with Brother Booker. Y'all can Brother Booker.
So before he comes up, I just want to say this, right? We do this every Saturday, 2 o'clock. But what we're trying to do is educate our community, right? Give us something to think about, right? And then create strategies that can help us help ourselves. Just think, right? I want to thank y'all for coming today, right? You could have been somewhere else, but you're here, right? And that means a lot to me. Brother Booker.
Thank you, brother. I love women. We do something. I just want to be quick today that we completed going through the list last week of the top 10 characteristics of a woman. And I just want to add, at the bottom of it, we had a question, say, okay, what's the next step? What do we do with the woman? How do we get our children to do it? And we said, well, we have to teach how to use these characteristics and qualities, and we must first explain each one of them to them. And not only explain them to them, we got to show them. We have to show our children what it is to be honest with themselves. We have to show our children what it is to love yourself. We have to show our children what it is to love your people. We have to show our children what it is to believe in themselves. We have to show our children what it means to believe in your people, even if your people don't believe in themselves. We have to show our children how to stand up and what is right, even if they have to stand alone. We have to show them, not just talk. We got to show them what we say when the one does what his brother, what he does for himself. We got to show our children. We got to show our children what it is to be a great communicator and how to listen. We've got to show them. We've got to be the example. We've got to show our children how to pray to die. We are not afraid to death of what we know is right. And we have to show our children that we would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. We have to show them. Not just teach them, but show them to it. We can't talk one way and then do something different. You know, we can't say go to church on Sunday and everything going to be all right, and we show them something totally different during the week. We have, my brother, mom, that's the fact. I just did. I have all 10. I have all 10 characteristics. Number one, and to me, this is the most important. They all are important. They all are. But they all tie into this first one. The one is honest with himself. We must be honest with ourselves. The one loves himself. The one loves his people. The one believes in himself. The one believes in his people even if they don't believe in themselves. The one always stands for what he knows is right,
even if he has to stand alone. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. The one is a great communicator, and he knows how to listen. The one is not afraid to die for what he knows is right. And number 10, the one would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. And when I say heaven and hell, I'm talking state of mind. In a peaceful state of mind or versus a hellish state of mind. The one. All right, brother? That's the 10. We're going to do a show on this once on YouTube. Thank you.
Thank you. Y'all thank these brothers. This is the kind of work we're doing, right? Think about which one you want to be, right? Think about, if I'm going to be the one starting today right now, which one am I going to choose first, right? The first one is obvious, right? How many of us are really honest with ourselves about who we are and what we do, right? And how we can improve ourselves, our mindsets, and our communities. That's the work that we have to do. Then, without all of the rest of the fluff that we got, educating our people on how we think and how we should begin to think. I want to take this time out to thank Brother Shaquille for coming today, right? Dr. Bruce Bridges was supposed to be here today, but he had another engagement that superseded ours, and we're okay with that, right? But we're here, right? And this brother standing in the gap, right? And so we thank him for coming and joining us today with a powerful, powerful lecture on the psychological impact of slavery. And I want y'all to think about this. Slavery is still impacting us. It's in us. It's in our DNA. And Brother Book always said that Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, even if we were leaving here 200 years later, they would still be in us, right? Because they're in our minds. And if they're in our minds, it is apparent by what we do in our homes and in our families. It's apparent by how our children are using drug culture and the music to kill each other while we sit here and wonder why. Our job is to educate our children to love themselves, right? So they won't pull a gun out on each other, nor will they pull a gun out on you. All right, psychological impact of slavery, brother, Shaquille, Ali, brother.
Mother, can I have permission to speak? Thank you. Because in African tradition, the younger always had to ask the elder in the room for permission to speak before they can speak. So, first and foremost, as African people, we always want to give praise and acknowledge our Creator and ask for His assistance and ask for His forgiveness. And we seek refuge in God from the evil of our souls and from the mischief of our deeds. To be honest with you, Brother Marvin, Brother Booker, Brother George basically just did my speech, so we can all go home. On a serious man, I am just so honored and humble to be here before you. But I want to thank you for allowing me to take time out to share like time and space with you today. Because as Brother Marvin said, you could have been anywhere else. You know, but my family and friends are here, so I asked to come here. And they showed up. You know, I don't take that for granted. It means a lot, you know, to me. And as the brother said, the rooms to be filled up for individuals and the lines to be outside. But let me tell you something. Like, when the brother spoke to me about the program or counseling the program, I was like, no, because my family is here, you know. And I want to speak to my family because there's nothing more important to me than my family, you know, and my friends and those individuals whom I love. And so definitely I'm humbled to be among you. And so what I want to do is I just want to read a little bit, and then we're going to have like a discussion about the psychological effects of slavery and how it affects us today in the 21st century, and mainly how it affects our children in the 21st century. So in my way of life, we have two things that, you know, we stand upon. And those two things are proof and evidence. And that means that if you tell me something that you can't prove it, if you tell me something that you show me no evidence for it, then there is a 99% chance that I won't accept that information. And the rule that for 1% is basically merely accepted because of logic. Meaning that if you tell me something that appeals to my awkward, which we call intellect, that appeals to my intellect and is logical, then I can accept that also. But that's a 1% chance. Because in our tradition, there used to be a time in history when the individual would come to you and he would speak, the people would first say, "Who are you? Who are you?" And after he identified himself, if he was not known, they would ask him, "Well, who did you study up under?" If he gives that information, and that individual was not known, then he was not allowed to speak in the group. Why do I mention that? I mention that because we allow anybody to come before us and speak. And we take information from people who may have a bunch of titles or initials in front or behind their names, and we take that information to be true and exact. And what happens when we do that, oftentimes we are misled because we don't take the opportunity to take the time to investigate those who come before me. And so in saying that, I want to first thank Brother Marvin. I want to thank Brother George for properly vetting me and making a conscious decision to allow me to come before you and give you some information of encouragement or information of inspiration. And oftentimes when I speak, it's often information that maybe we might even disagree about. But that's okay, too, because disagreement benefits the belief. Agreement, we learn things. You know, we are informed of certain things we might not know of. And so to introduce myself, like the brother said, I am Shaquille Ali. I'm the president and CEO of a nonprofit organization called TRAP. And that's an acronym for a Total Reality Approach Process, and that we are committed to changing the human injustice that involve African people. And I'm a staunch advocate of prisoners' rights. During my lifetime, I come from a dysfunctional environment. And when I say that, understand I'm not talking about, and we look at our environment today, in our neighborhoods today, we see that we are dysfunctional, right? And so coming from a dysfunctional environment, the dysfunctionality in myself led me to spend most of my adult life incarcerated, in prison. So through my life's journey in prison, and when I look back and reflect and ponder of where I come from, it's very important that I understand who I come from. My mother and father, my grandfather, my grandmother, and the legacy of our ancestors, because it's extremely important that we understand who these people were. And when I begin to get into a little more deeper into my lecture, you'll understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. Because one of the biggest problems that we have forgotten who we are. And the reason why we have forgotten who we are is because we don't remind ourselves who we come from, what people that we come from. And this is part of, set up here now, but he just has the book of Willie Lynch. This comes from that. And speak about Willie Lynch. Each and every one of us in this room right now have a Willie Lynch chip inside of our heads. Whether it's conscious or unconscious, it's better if you become conscious of it. But the majority of African people remain unconscious thoughts. And by the time I'm going to give you a little test so you can understand and comprehend why you have a Willie Lynch chip inside of you. So, a man once was speaking to a crowd of landowners, and this is what he said. He said, "I greet you here on the banks of the James River in the year of our Lord 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. As our boat sailed south of the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible I cherish. I saw enough to know that the problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies along its old highways in great numbers, you are here using the tree and the rope on occasion. Who said that? Who said that? Everybody, who said that? I'm introducing you to Willie Lynch.
Tell him that story.
Oh, Willie goes on to say, what we do with horses is that we break them from one form of life to another. That is, we reduce them from the natural state in nature, whereas nature provides them with the natural capacity to take care of their needs and the needs of their offspring. That's extremely important. Their needs, but also the needs of who? The needs of their offspring. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slave for at least 300 years. For at least 300 years. I have outlined a number of differences among the slaves, and I take these differences and I make them bigger. I use fear for control purposes. Take this simple list of differences and think about them. On top of my list is age. But it's there only because it starts with an A. Second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, size of plantation, status on plantations, on the hill, east, west, north, and south. Those who have fine hair, those who have coarse hair, or is tall or short. I assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slave, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. For hundreds of years, or maybe thousands. And the topic of this discussion is the psychological effects of slavery, and I add to it and how it affects us in the 21st century. And so if you look at our people right now in the 21st century, do you think that we still are separated by color? Yes. Do we have a color confrontation in the 21st century? Yes. You can speak. Talking to my friend about this the other day, that even sororities at the time and a color confrontation between their sorority. And that the dark-skinned girls couldn't join a certain sorority. That it was only for light-skinned women. And so we still suffer that. You think we still suffer from the texture of our hair?
That's right.
Why do we still call our hair nappy? Say it again? Because it was an indoctrination. Right?
Right.
But truthfully, nappy hair is the best hair. You know why? Because you can do anything with nappy hair. You can curl it. You can straighten it. You can corn roll it. You can plait it. You can do with nappy hair anything you want to do with it. So it's the best type of hair. But we've been taught that it's the worst type of hair. And so we are so focused on the outer appearance because what? Because we have been enslaved and indoctrinated by the Willie Lynch chip that's inside of us. What about, talked about the plantation, right? He said the separation about those that's on the plantation, those in the big house, and those who live out in the outhouse.
Oh, sure.
Today, those who live in mansions, they look down upon the people who live in projects. Because the Willie Lynch syndrome tells them that they are better. Because I can afford to live in better conditions than you. And so there's a division between the rich and the poor. The same way it was a division between the house Negro and the field Negro. And so what Willie Lynch taught the slave masters was this, that if you continue to keep them separated and divided, you would be able to control them. For how many years? 300 and even thousands of years, you would still be able to control them. Now, before going any further, I got to come to this point that I want everybody to agree on. Because if we can't agree on this, then we can't move forward as a people. The foundation of the slave makers thinking was and still is the belief that black male and females must remain divided and ignorant in order that its system may function according to its plans, uninterrupted and in orderly fashion. So how does all of this work? Did everybody agree that that was the plan? Does everybody agree that the plan is still going on today? Is there anybody in this room that does not agree with that? And so we're all on the same court. So I can move on. And so a common example in the lives of black people takes place in domestic disputes mediated by so-called white authorities, peacekeepers, or social workers. We invite them into our homes to solve the very problems that their forefathers created. These individuals are the descendants of Willie Lynch's people that created and instigated the artificial problems that we constantly wrestle with one another over, often in the black community, right? Often in our community, as black men and black women, if we get a divorce, where do we go? We go to the courthouse.
Right to the judge.
Right to the judge to have someone to take care of our affairs. This is the system that's been designed and set up for us. If we have money issues in our home, most likely we're suing each other, where do we go? To the courthouse to have those problems solved again. Our finances, wherever we go, in the banking system, where do we go? Everywhere we go, the slave master rules. And so in understanding this, I want to bring up, Willa once said that if you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking about hate. I'm not speaking about hating anyone. I'm speaking about the systemic institutions that have been set up and designed to keep us oppressed. And the only way that we can move forward is to understand how this system works. It's how this system works. And so Neely Fuller said also that in all areas of people activity, white supremacy has set up a system. In everything that we do, white supremacy rules over top of us. And I know a lot of people think that we have freedom in this country. Because what do you have? You have the Oprah Winfrey's of the world and the Tyler Perry's of the world. And you see our people that look like us, that have billions and billions of dollars and success. And we believe that that success equals freedom. But it does not equal freedom. It equals liberty. Because the freedom that they have was also given to them by their oppressors. And the difference between freedom and liberty, which we get confused about, is that freedom means that you can practically just do what you want to do, go where you want to go. And no one tells you. No one has to give you permission to do these things. Liberty is that you can do certain functions in life. You may be able to go where you want to go, but it's through permission. That's liberty. This is what we have in this country. We have liberty. We don't have freedom. Because in those areas of people activity and economics, as the brother just spoke about, and entertainment, and education, and labor, and law, and sex, and war, and even counter-war, white supremacy rules. White supremacy rules. They continue to oppress a whole entire people that a man came. What year did he come? Do you remember?
1712.
A man came in 1712 and devised a plan that in 2024 still exists. I'm not no mathematician. Somebody can add how many years that is. From 1712 to 2024, a white man that wasn't even from America came here and told the slave master, I'm going to give you a system. If you just do what I tell you to do, if you just follow what I tell you to follow, you will be able to control them for at least 300 years. But if you do it right, it may be thousands of years if you do it right. Do y'all think they did it right?
They were coming out of
And so we have to begin to examine ourselves as people. And how can a man come to the shores of this land? James River. How far did James River go? So don't say where he landed at, right? But he could have been right down the street from us right now at the James River, giving this speech. So I wanted to have a clear description of the detailed damage, like on a microscopic level, and to show why as black men and women have not been able to put complete end to the widespread madness of internal conflict and division, and why we have so much conflict and division. And so anybody that knows me knows that I'm a YouTuber. And so I'm always on YouTube. And I learn a lot from YouTube, right? When I want some silly and foolishness, I might go to TikTok so I get a laugh here and there. But for information, I go to YouTube. Because we have scholars on YouTube that are constantly giving us information that will benefit us. But then sometimes when you go on these websites, you can see it. You can see the woolly lens chipping us. You can see it. You can see our women that are uncovered, and that are twerking. Because this is their value. This is their value. You see men, and you see the absentee fathers in our neighborhoods. Why do you think that is? Do you think that we just want to have children and not take care of them? No. It's through the woolly lynch chip that's inside of us. See, because a lot of us don't know there was breeding grounds. They were breeding us like horses, like animals. But they would take black men and black women, and all they would do was to have sex and have children. And they would take those children and put them out in the fields as slaves. So there was no relationship. There was no affection there. That's why they called the black man what? Bucks. In the 21st century, how many black women call their sons Buck? That ain't his name. Where do you get that from? We don't even know. You go all over this country and find women who call their sons Buck. Because that's what the slave master used to call them and treat them like they were bucks. Like they were bucks. And so today in our female to male relationship, the problem that we have is that we don't even know how to love one another no more. We don't know how to treat one another no more. Because that chip has been planted inside of us, and that we don't know how to get rid of that chip. We're unconscious that the chip even exists. So I just mentioned that Willie Lynch said about this method, it would be self-refueling and it would be self-generating. What does that mean? How does it continue on? It continues on is that we pass it down to our children. We pass it down to our grandchildren. And then they pass it down to their children and their children's children. And so generation and generations, it's been passed down. This is what we do. We pass it down. And so now you don't have to have the oppressor do it, because now he has us in a place and juncture in life where we do it to ourselves. We do it to ourselves. Right? The first detachment that we as African people had were between the African and those Africans that were captured and brought over here to America. And so the oppressor understood that there had to be a detachment away from them. So what did they do? The brother quoted. They took away our language. They took away our religion. They took away our names. They took away our culture. Because they didn't want us to have any attachment to the African people to make sure that we were separated from our ancestors. That's the first attachment. The second attachment is between the slave and the non-slave. Now, who was the non-slave? That's me. That's you. Right? We have an attachment away from the slaves because we look at that as being some type of embarrassment. The slave is being some type of shame.
Right.
And so now what you often hear black people say is that we are descendants of kings and queens. Right? How many of us have heard that by show of hands? Why do you think this is said so much?
Exactly.
So let's examine this for a minute. Have you also ever heard that we sold our own people into slavery during the seventh? The kings and queens. Now, do you think the kings and queens were selling their offspring into slavery?
Nope. Captured.
Right? Who were they selling? They were selling the people who they thought was unworthy. They were selling the blue-collar worker. That's who they were selling. And that's who we are the descendants of. We are not descendants of kings and queens. We are descendants of the slave.
Right.
And one of the reasons I can stand here and say that I'm proud to be a descendant of the slave, because they were the strongest, most resilient people that existed on this planet. So if you detach yourself away from the slaves, you are detaching yourself away from the greatest people that has ever lived on this planet. On this planet. Can you imagine as a mother telling your daughter that one night a man is going to come into this cabin and he is going to rape you? It may be one man, it may be several men, but you can't scream. And you have to tell your daughter how to conduct herself. Because if you don't conduct yourself properly, the consequences could be death for you and me. The consequences could be that they would remove you from me and I would never see you again in my life. Can you imagine men having to tell their sons that when you grow up and you have a wife, don't love her too hard? Because during the wee hours of the night, the slave master may come into your cabin and tell you to get out and fornicate with your wife. And you got to act accordingly. Because if you don't, then the consequences could be death.
Oh, that's good.
And after he gets through doing whatever he wants to do with your wife, now you got to go back in that cabin. And what do you think the conversation is going to be when he goes back into that cabin? The wife has said, why didn't you do something?
Hey.
And he says, what do you want me to do? What could I do? It's about survival. And so we got to live through that trauma. And this is where the post-traumatic slave syndrome comes from. That we still suffer post-traumatic slave syndrome from those events of our slave masters. And so now the black man and the black woman are still at odds with each other in the 21st century. We can't get along for nothing, can we? The black woman say what? It's the black man's fault. Black man says black woman's fault. You know? And the court said, yeah, that's what we want. The master's still controlling our household. The people come away and snatch away our kids, just like they snatched away the kids on the plantation.
Come on.
They snatch away our kids. Where do they put them at? Juvenile detention centers and prisons all over this country. And I always say prisons are nothing but slave ships on land. Still suffering. And how do we get up out of this, though? How do we get up out of this if we're so divided? Carter G. Woodson, who started Black History Week, right? And Black History Week turned into what? Black History Month. The famous book by Carter G. Woodson is what? The Miseducation of the Negro. I tell everyone, don't speak to me about Black History Month if you've never read this book.
That's right.
You don't even have a right to speak to me. You ain't got to read the whole book. You could simply just read the first page. That's it. Page one. Read it, and you got it. Page one. And I'm going to tell you a little bit what page one says. Page one says that the black man, black woman, black child in this country, everything that he does, and it's a sorority, right? Everything that we do division. We are divided, right? One sorority thinks they're better than the other, right? One fraternity thinks they're better than the other. You got the Masons. You got the Elks, right? You got the Shriners, you know? You got the Methodists. You got the Baptists, right? You got the Christians. You got the Muslims, right? Everything we do, I want you to think about it. Everything that we do is done to divide us. Because we don't have a pan-Africanist mind.
Right.
That all of us are in this boat together. Right? The rich,
right.
The poor, the haves, and the have-nots. Everything we do is done to divide and conquer. And so as long as we stay divided, they will always be able to conquer us. They will always be able to conquer us. And so it's imperative for us to stop believing in the separation, to come together as black people, because we all suffer from the same condition. I'm going to give you an analogy that I've seen that the people did some tests on. And listen, all the time, right? Because rats have a connection to the thought process of a human being. If they try to come up with some type of cure for something, who they tested on? They tested on rats, right? And if the rats can, you know, if they can get through it, they say the human being can get through it. Did they ever test the vaccine on rats? The COVID vaccine? Brother say he assumed they did. We don't know. Dude. We don't even know, right? But history tells us that they experiment on rats, right? They experiment on rats. So I want everybody, when you go home today, I want you to look up something. And I'm off track right quick. So I want you to look up something. Tavistock Institute.
Right.
Tavistock Institute. I want you to look that up. And I want you to see what they do in this institute. They study us. They study us. Our habits, our spending habits, right? So they took these rats. They put these rats in one environment, spacious, where the rats could go all around freely, up and down, such and such. And then they put a rat, then they put rats in another environment. But these rats were stacked on top of each other. So they didn't have, like, a lot of room to move. So they were confined in this space. And so what they did was now they have a maze. And so they took the rats that could move around freely, and these rats went through this maze like it wasn't nothing. So they took the rats that they had stacked up and put them in this maze. Not one rat made it. They could not figure out how to get through that maze. So they said, okay, now let's take the rats that were stacked up and let's put them in the environment where they can move around freely, up, down, and play and all this. And we're going to take these rats and we're going to stack them up. And they left these rats stacked up. So now they say the rats that got through the maze freely, let's see if they can do it again. So the rats down that moved freely, they put them in the maze, and they couldn't get out. They couldn't get out. But the rats at first that couldn't get out, now they can go through the maze freely. Why am I telling you this? Because in our communities, in the projects, black folks are stacked up on one another. On one another. In prison, prisoners are stacked up on one another. You can't move freely, right? And you know what that maze is? That maze is life. That maze is life. That's why our children have a difficult time navigating their way through life because of the environment in which they live in. And they even showed that where the rats were stacked up at, they began to fight each other.
Right.
They began to kill each other because they were so confined. Just say, hey, let's invent this thing called the projects. And let's let black folks live like this and watch what happens. And it's hard to believe that when they put these individuals in the projects, they brought in hundreds of rats and let them off in the project. That's how the project got rat infested. They brought the rats in, right? They brought the rats in. It's hard for us to fathom that and believe that. Do you know why it's hard for us to believe that? Because of the Willie Lynch chip, right? Because we are a people. We are a loving people. We are a kind people. And so we can't even imagine that someone would do something like this. How many of us seen the documentary Roots? Actually watched it. And so we know that Kunta Kinte just kept running for his freedom. He just wanted to be free. And so what happened to him? Somebody tell me. They cut his foot off. And when he was laying in the bed, he passed out. And when he woke up and looked at his foot and he seen that he had half a foot, what did he say? He said, what type of man would do this to another man? Right. This is what our people have been to. That we can't imagine that people would do this to us. And so what happens a lot of times is we'll even come to the slave master's defense. We'll come to his defense. Even when it comes to our children, we'll come to his defense. How much time I got, Brother George?
How much?
I'm good. And so we speak about those individuals who made the ultimate sacrifice for us. That if it wasn't for them going through what they went through, then you and I wouldn't be in this room today. We wouldn't be able to enjoy the luxuries that we enjoy, the cars, the houses, the nice clothes, the nice shoes, right? We wouldn't be able to enjoy those luxuries if it wasn't for the slaves. Because trust me, they could have given up. They could have given up to go to work from sunup to sundown where their bodies are aching and the soles of their feet are hurting. And I remind you, they didn't get paid any wages. They didn't get paid any wages. How many of us in here got jobs? All right, go to work, take a pause, man. I want y'all just to keep the paycheck. I'm going to work for free. I'm going to work. Y'all going to have it. See, they work for free so we could get paid. But we are embarrassed about them. We don't speak about them. We don't teach our kids about them. Because we are ashamed to talk about the slaves. Right? We are ashamed to talk about the slaves. And so they show a slave movie. You know what most black people say? Man, I can't watch that stuff. I don't want to watch that stuff. You need to watch it. You need to understand why 12 years a slave. It's so pertinent to what we have in the 21st century that to take a man that's free and put him in bondage. He don't see his kids or his wife no more. That he's whipped. Do you think you can take some whips on your back the way he was being whipped? Man, we would break. We would break. Some of them was beaten every day. Because they have enough weight in the cotton bag. And they hit me one time with that whip. I'm done. All the lashes they took so we can enjoy the pleasures of life. And yet we are embarrassed to talk about them. And so it's easier for us to say that we just did it to kings and queens. Because it makes us distinguished. It gives us a nobility, right? But no, we are the citizens of slaves. And we should be proud of them. We are God's chosen people. And I don't give a damn what anybody says. That's how I feel. We are God's chosen people. No one. In the history on the planet Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, or any other planet, has been through what our people have gone through. So I'm going to ask everybody in this room right now, I want you to do one thing for me. I want us collectively to stop celebrating Christmas. Now, I said I was going to test y'all, right? That was your test. Because when I said stop celebrating Christmas and Easter, Thanksgiving, right? Do you know what happened to a lot of us? The Willie Lynch tip clicked in. You see how it clicked in? You don't even know why it clicked in. The Willie Lynch tip clicked in. Oh, it's nothing wrong with celebrating Christmas. I do it for the kids. It's Jesus' birthday. We're going to come up with all these excuses in our heads to say, I'm not doing it. We're going to rationalize over and over again while we keep celebrating holidays. You know why? Somebody tell. Because there's some things we just can't stop doing because the chip won't allow us to stop doing. The chip won't allow us to stop doing. And it also takes effect when it comes to our children. Refueling and regenerating this over and over and over and over again. With Christmas trees and light bulbs and Christmas decorations on your house. Why do we do it? Because my mother did it. My grandmother did it. Well, why did they do it? What's the rationale behind it? This is where we have to take a look at ourselves and say, the things that we do in life, man, how does it benefit us or does it harm us? Who benefits from Christmas? The retailers. The Walmarts of the world, right? The Walmarts of the world. You know? What they call the day after Thanksgiving? Black Friday. You know why? Because everybody acts like a fool. And when you act like a fool, they're always associated with something black. When something's black, desolate, right? You know, bad luck, black cat. You know, witches were black. Angels were what? Angels were white. When we die, what do we wear? Black. Black always associated with what? Death. Where do we get this from? Where do we get this from? I want you to keep saying the Williams chip. I want you to keep saying it. I want you to keep saying it so you'll understand how this thing works. I want you to understand how this thing works. So what's happening now with us and our parents, I always say that, you know, I had a conversation that those mothers that's probably 70 and above, right? In the last 3-4 generations, those are the best of our generation. Our mothers. And look at how they behave. And look how they dress. And look how they act. And what happened to us? What happened to us? Say it again. Yeah, so we refueling it and we are regenerating it, right? Because now what happens is our children are grown now, you know? But they don't have the mental capacity to be grown. They don't have the mental capacity to have children, to raise another human being. So there's people in our families, girls that are 15 and 16 having babies, and we think this is okay. And we say nothing. And we celebrate this. And we tell them, oh, we're going to have the biggest baby shower for you. We're going to have a gender reveal party for you, right? You know what I'm saying? And we celebrate this. In some cultures, if a woman came home and told her father she was pregnant and she wasn't married, they would kill her. You are an embarrassment to this family. And when they killed her, nothing would happen because everybody in the neighborhood knew and understood why they killed her. Why they killed her. We accept too much for our children. And that our mothers didn't accept from us. So anybody ever heard of grown folk music? I mean, has anybody ever heard of? Has anybody ever heard of grown folk conversation? All right, then tell me about your 7-year-old daughter telling me that Aunt Susie is speaking with Pat. How she know that? How she know that? They having the same adult conversation, right? Tell me about your 6-year-old son or your 6-year-old grandson or granddaughter know all the lyrics to Sexy Red. This twerking and dancing to Cardi B and Sukiyana. Why? Because they no more grown folk now. They are the grown folks. They are the grown folks. They can tell us all our business. They may come in the house and say, Mama, did you hear? Huh? Did you hear that Ralph blocking Susie's eye? They was talking about it when I went to the hairdresser. Because the kids in the hairdresser left. Because they're the mothers taking the kids to the hairdresser at such an early age to get weeds. They put weeds in babies' hair now. The baby ain't even a year old now. I know that because I watch YouTube. Yeah. So collectively, we as a people have to come to identify with what this thing is that we call white supremacy. Like, what is, you know, how does it work? Why do we want to keep up with the Joneses? If someone buys something, we got to have it. So God says, I'm going to get ready to close out. So God says that never, never, never will the heart be satisfied unless it loves God more than it loves anything else. And so everything that we have in life, you would never be satisfied with it. If you live in a $500,000 house, do you know what you want? $1 million house. If you drive a $100,000 car, do you know what you want? A $200,000 car. Because you would never be content in this life, in this world. You would never be content. Because all through life is all the way you move. Everything that we do is about movement and about shiftment. And what has got us is that the whole world has shifted right before our very eyes. And we didn't even know it. And so you see us now. At our age, whether we're in our 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s, most of our conversations revolve around what? Do you remember when? I didn't grow up like that. Do you remember when? So then when we look back and say, how did everything change? Because there was a shiftment. There was a movement in the minds of our people. There was a movement. And we began to think different. And when you think different, you act different. So we have a